Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the fourth day of June 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. We'll get a view from the farm with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting's Matt Bennett out of Windsor, Illinois. Hear all about the weather forecast, too, that from T-Storms. Mike Tenora out of Chicago, and along the way we'll check in with all the agricultural news and information for the day on this Thursday from Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's check now the numbers in Chicago at the CME Group as they finished up in the corn pit for the afternoon. July contract at $3.63, up 4 cents. September, $3.70, up 4 and a quarter. In December, $3.80 and a half, up 3 and 3 quarters. March contract, 3 and a half higher, $3.91. July at $4.05 and a quarter. That finished 4 cents higher on the day. Soy complex, July beans, $9.46 and a half, 11 and a quarter higher. August at $9.34 and a quarter, up 9 and 3 quarters. And September at $9.25 and 3 quarters. Up 10 and 3 quarters. November beans at 9.23 and a half, up 8 and a half cents. And January at 9.31 and a quarter, up 9 cents for the day. Bean meal futures at 3.05.60, up 2.90. And the bean oil for the afternoon, 9 cents lower at 34.64. Wheat futures soft red contract in the July harvest month at $5.22 and 3 quarters, 12 higher. September up 13 at 5.28. Live cattle futures from the CME Group in the nearby June contract this afternoon at 153.37 and a half, or 87 and a half higher. August at 151.65, $1.02 and a half higher. And the feeder cattle on the day at $222.82 and a half, 92 and a half cents higher. September there at $221.27 and a half, up 70. And the lean hogs finished like this, 82.25. They were $1.30 lower for the day. July futures at $80.65 finished $1.82 and a half lower on the afternoon. Quick look at some of the outside markets for the afternoon. Crude oil for this hour at $58.06, down $1.58. The RBOB price of gasoline or wholesale at $1.98.04. That's 6 cents lower for the day. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Let's check some of the rest of the outside markets at this hour. Ethanol futures at $1.55 and 6 cents. That's up 2 and a tenth of a cent. Natural gas for the day at $2.63 and a half, a tenth of a cent higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.84 and 6 cents, down 4 and a half cents. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now just about 196 points lower at 17,900. Gold futures down $8.80 at $1,175.90. Here's what the National Weather Service says about the weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Mostly sunny skies, a high of 83 degrees. Southwest winds at about 8 miles an hour. Tonight, cloudy, a low of 65. And Friday, showers and thunderstorms. Likely mostly cloudy with a high of 78 on Friday. Light and variable winds out of the north-northeast at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance of rainfall during the day set at 70%. That will fade as we make our way into the evening hours under mostly cloudy skies with a low of 59 on a north-northeast wind at about 10 miles an hour. Saturday sunny and 79, east-northeast winds at 10 miles an hour. And then on Saturday evening, cloudy and a low of 62. Sundays, we'll see a 40% chance of showers, some thunderstorms, partly sunny, a high of 85. And Sunday night, showers and thunderstorms are likely, mostly cloudy, and 68. By the time we start the work week on Monday, we'll still have showers and thunderstorms around. They'll dissipate. We'll have partly sunny skies and a high of 83, partly cloudy on Monday night, and 63 for our low. More on the weather at the bottom of the half hour.
agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium on this Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker joins us from CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Dan, thanks for being with us. Can you take us through the technical picture of the marketplace, much like you did earlier today with us?
Well, the buy signals started flashing last week when the wheat market started to perk up. So a lot of your technical systems have all kind of flashed buy signals, or at least the early buy signals. So some of your early speculative types that wanted to go long the market, they're probably starting getting in last week. Then some of the shorts that were short need the technical picture to begin to tell them to get out also out of their short positions. Now, Monday, we came in here and we did slip underneath last week's lows, and now we're up for the week significantly with today's yesterday's advance and now today's advance on the table. Now tomorrow could be another day and could lose everything, but corn and soybean futures have a weekly reversal to the upside in the making. And that is the first sign of indication that we've at least put in a bottom of some kind right now. I personally, it depends upon whether or not it's going down or going up, but when you make reversals to the upside or reversals to the downside in the first part of the month, those have potentials then of becoming monthly reversals down or monthly reversals to the upside. Now, in this case, corn and soybeans are going to be positioned to make monthly reversals to the upside. But the danger point is that we will have to trade through that June 30th stocks report and acres report. So that could kill a potential monthly reversal to the upside very quickly as the market, you know, responds almost limit advances or losses on these stocks reports lately. So, but at least technically, we're coming off of oversold conditions, both on a daily chart and a weekly chart. My timing for some time now has we've been in a window for a five-year cycle to turn up in corn, and a five-year cycle to turn up in wheat, and a 39-month cycle to turn up in soybeans. And wheat is now the leader here due to the weather worries we're starting to see around the world, especially in Europe. We've got a high-pressure ridge building, and they're going to be put under some pretty good stress here for a few days next week. We've already had India under significant stress with a string of 112-type degree days, so the wheat crop in India has been significantly cut. We're starting to worry about dryness in Canada, and we're not really too sure about the U.S. crop yet. So the fundamentals in wheat are now beginning to come in play that they're tightening up, and wheat is starting to lead this rally for now. Now, the weather has been excellent, I guess most people kind of feel, and we're off to a good start on new crop prospects. But I think due to the counter-seasonal decline that we had during March, April, and May, especially April and May here on into this first week of June, is that that was pricing in, I think, probably the upper end yield expectations for the year. So I think the market has already priced in a national average corn yield in the 168 or 9. I think they priced in a 46 yield on beans. So I do think a lot of the expectations of ICC yields are priced in, and I think the shorts are going to have a hard time defending their position unless the dollar would turn around and take a big move to the upside. That's the only thing that worries me is the dollar still could go another round of price strength due to the Greece situation that we've been kind of trading for the last 5 years, I think. But I personally think the dollar is headed lower longer term, because I just don't believe the Fed is going to raise interest rates during the presidential election year. I just don't think that's going to happen, and I don't think the economy is really strong enough. If they do any kind of raising, it might be one tick. It's not going to significantly impact the value of the dollar. So I think eventually the dollar is going to weaken. That's going to add, be supportive to increased demand in the marketplace. So from a cyclical, technical point of view, the lights are all green is the way I interpret them. There is no doubt, I will be first to admit, that if we go ahead and have another crop anywhere close to what we had last year, we got some downside price risk in this marketplace. So it's really touchy in here. But I don't think at the end of the day we're going to have these upgraded yields. I think we're still going to probably have a good crop. I think the yields could very easily be down in the low 160s on corn, and very easily in the 44 or so on soybeans. We got a lot of weather to go through. Each year is different, but nobody really can put their finger on anything, how things develop. But we do know that July and August and first half September is going to be important. Fundamentally, the other thing I think that what corn's got going for it is we're not going to have any July or August corn available to the marketplace this year. So even though we have a large ending stock, I don't think that large ending stock is going to feel as heavy, because we're not going to have much July or August corn coming out of the South due to their lateness in plantings. So basis levels could be quite strong, especially in the eastern half of the Corn Belt, because most of the larger crop inventories of old crop is still mostly confined to the western Corn Belt. So I think it could be an interesting year, especially if the cycles are in tune and teed up here to begin to move to the upside, which basically says that the fundamentals will start falling in place to be price supportive.
All right. We'll talk with you again more during Commodity Week, about 25, 30 minutes from now, and get that posted to the website yet this evening. Thanks so much for not making me work too hard and asking you questions this afternoon.
Very well. We'll talk to you in 30 minutes then.
Okay. Thanks so much, Dan. That's Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday afternoon. Last week, the United States Environmental Protection Agency released its RFS proposal. That's the renewable fuel standard that guides how biofuels, things like corn-based ethanol and soybeans made into biodiesel, are used in the nation's fuel supply at mandated sometimes levels. At first blush, that RFS proposal looked to be very good for biodiesel, not so great for ethanol. And even according to Scott Irwin at his first reading of the proposal. But once he got into the details, it's a bit more nuanced. I was in on a conversation earlier today with Scott, and he was asked just exactly how it is that the RFS would impact the biodiesel industry.
Well, I think it's so important that when you back up from the specific numbers, which are clearly important for the industry in the short run, but what's really important for the biodiesel industry is that if one takes the EPA policy as given and projects it for the remaining life of the RFS through 2022, essentially going forward, biodiesel is in the driver's seat rather than corn-based ethanol.
The question then at this point is, can the industry for biodiesel expand?
Probably. There's a lot of variables that would go into that. The U.S. EIA estimates that current production capacity for biodiesel in the U.S. is around 2.3 billion gallons. And there's a good chance that by 2016 or 2017, we would go past that number. But on the other hand, there's quite a bit of mothballed capacity out there. How much of it could come in to play? How much of it's registered for generating the D4 RINs credits? And then in addition, how much competition from imports of biodiesel, conventional biodiesel and renewable diesel would we see? So there's a lot of variables.
We're a bit variable in the long run as it relates to biodiesel made for soybeans, but really it puts it in a very good position. On the other hand, corn-based ethanol looked shortchanged in the RFS proposal, at least at first blush. That certainly was the way that Scott Irwin and almost all the rest of the industry viewed it. However, once he dug deeper, says Scott Irwin, he saw where U.S. EPA was headed.
If you dig deep into the EPA proposal and look at the details, based on their assumptions, they intended those ethanol mandates to force or pressure or push either higher blends of ethanol or non-ethanol biofuel like biodiesel. But that was based on the assumptions that they had built into their analysis.
So the push by EPA appears to be calculated to advanced biofuels, things like biodiesel, even higher blends of ethanol in the marketplace. To that end, USDA, at the same time that US EPA was announcing the RFS, announced $100 million to be put into blender pumps for gas stations. Those pumps would be able to put higher blends of ethanol into the market.
I mean, it definitely was directly factored into the proposal. The way I like to frame it is to think of, in volume terms, how much push do you want the ethanol mandates to contain? And when I say push, I mean how much above the E10 blend wall do you want to force higher ethanol blends or additional biodiesel? And of course, that depends entirely on your estimate of the E10 blend wall.
To be clear, from Scott Irwin's point of view, the RFS and the $100 million investment in blender pumps are both calculated to be used together.
It seems to me that that was a definite coordinated announcement, and it's a part of the EPA intending to provide some push towards higher blends in the ethanol mandates, and then providing some incentives on the other side to provide the infrastructure that would help facilitate those higher blends.
And here's how cellulosic ethanol came out in the proposal. Remember, it's always been about 5 years out ever since the beginning of these proposals.
I think it came out actually reasonably good compared to actual production levels. Now, the advanced biofuels industry would certainly like to have seen more aggressive standards that would have provided more force or push in the direction of cellulosic ethanol. But the EPA proposed what looks to me, based on our experience so far, a pretty aggressive number for 2016 of 206 million gallons of cellulosic ethanol, when we've to date only managed to produce a few million gallons. So with the plants coming online, I think we can get there, but we haven't shown yet a track record of doing so.
And finally, one other note on this subject. Scott Irwin thinks that the intent of Congress may be viewed from two different points of view as it relates to the RFS, and that U.S. EPA is looking at both sides of this particular marketplace.
There's absolutely a major political struggle, but I think it's probably best characterized as the biofuels groups have one interpretation of the intent of Congress, and the petroleum and oil industries have another different interpretation of what the intent was, or at least should be now, given reality. And that's the clash over the standards and what they mean and how they should be interpreted.
That's Scott Irwin, University of Illinois Ag Economist, talking about the RFS proposal as released by U.S. EPA last week. Let's turn our attention now directly to the cash grain market on the phone line from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, is Matt Bennett. Matt, thanks so much for being with me. First, tell me how conditions are there on the farm in your part of the world.
I would say things look about as good as what we could really hope for. I think, our crops look awfully good. We were able to get corn and beans in the ground in pretty good time, and everything looks pretty good. A lot of guys doing some spraying. There's a lot of hay getting baled this week. So, guys, I hope maybe the rain holds off a little bit longer, but I don't think anybody wants to chase one away just yet.
Now, last weekend, I don't think you got the 3.5 inches that we did here in Champaign County and on over into central Illinois. I made that trip to Elkhart, which is about 80 miles due west of where I am now, near Springfield, last evening, and there was a whole lot of rain, some real ponding in some areas.
Yeah, we average probably about 7 or 8 tenths on our farms. I don't think we had anything over maybe 1.25 inches anywhere, so we were very lucky there. We were very fortunate in that.
Okay. When you think about old crop cash grain, corn in particular, how would you lay out, at least at this perspective, without knowing the WASD numbers, the grain stocks, or the acreage figures in June, which is difficult, how it will play out from now until harvest in early September?
Well, I think with cash grain, a person has to understand that we talked about this, probably beat it to death, but, there's still a lot of cash grain out there. Anytime we see these moves that are just a little bit higher, any given processor, not all, but we've seen processors pull the reins back in just a little bit here and there. Person has to understand that there's just a lot of cash crop out there. There hasn't been a whole lot of new crop sold either, so there's going to be a fair amount of hedge pressure with regards to corn on any move higher, and probably a little bit of a basis deterioration as well.
So your expectation was an old crop market on basis appreciation?
Well, I think what I think a guy needs to be doing is he either needs to do a basis contract to lock in good basis levels if he wants to wait just a little while and see if the weather market materializes, or simply just get out of the corn and he can re-own it on paper, maybe something basis, the new crop, just simply because that's where all the uncertainty is. You know, the old crop is a known commodity. We know what we've got for the most part. The new crop, you know, people don't understand, hey, are we going to lose a few acres because of planting? Are we going to, potentially have some weather issues? Obviously, most of this corn crop in our neck of the woods is all going to pollinate in a one-week window. So we could definitely be running into some weather issues. We don't have any weather premium right now. So if I was going to be long corn, I'd want to be basis the new crop.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us. We sure do appreciate it.
Yep, thanks, Todd.
That, of course, Matt Bennett. He is with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. When we come back, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. That with Mike Tenor of T-Storm Weather in Chicago.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It's Feast Day of St. Boniface, patron saint of brewers. On this day in agricultural history in 1856, the first vegetarian community was established in Kansas by Henry Club, the leading advocate of vegetarianism in the U.S. Club wrote that his colony would preserve the principles of vegetarianism and would induce thousands of wavering citizens to, quote, adopt a system of diet so highly conductive to their happiness and well-being. The dream colony was named Octagon City. In 1876, Foil-wrapped bananas were sold for a dime at the Centennial Exposition in Philadelphia. Bananas became a popular treat for the first time in the U.S. when word spread about how delicious they were. In 1877, the U.S. Congress taxed oleomargarine to protect the dairy industry. The Margarine Act of 1886 was in response to a judicial ruling saying oleomargarine could not be banned from import or production. And in 1883, James and William Horlick developed the process to dehydrate milk, and they received a patent for it. They called the new powder malted milk. The original idea was to produce a milk product for babies and invalids that could be shipped without spoiling. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You may find this agricultural programming on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason for Thursday. We're joined by Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago to look at the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. I think we'll stick with North America today, Mike. Let's start with the Midwest, the growing regions in Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Minnesota, Nebraska, the primary Corn Belt. What do you see in the next several days?
There'll be a lot of thunderstorms around the region, especially as you move to the west of the Mississippi River. So that's kind of the main area where we'll see areas of thunderstorms. Most of those centered on Iowa and then into Missouri and also into adjacent corn and soybean areas of Nebraska and Kansas. So that's where the wettest weather occurs through about Sunday. As we get into next week, it does stay a bit wet across the southwest half of the central U.S. That includes a large portion of the central and southern plains. So we're talking about Nebraska on south into Oklahoma, and then also areas along and to the south of Interstate 80, especially across Missouri into central and southern Illinois, and then points on to the south.
You mentioned Oklahoma. They had an awful lot of rain, a wheat crop there and in Kansas. I suppose it still could be struggling from disease. How much rainfall did they get?
Well, Oklahoma had an amazing record for the month of May. Unofficially, they received 14.85 inches of rain. The prior record going back 121 years was only 10.54 inches. So they exceeded that record by around 4 1/3 of an inch. Just to put that in a little bit of perspective, the standard deviation of their rainfall over the last 121 years is 1.96 inches. So what that tells you is that in any given year, you would expect rainfall to range within about 2 inches of average across Oklahoma, their average being just under 5 inches for the month. So when you look at just how wet it was, having been more than 10 inches wetter than normal, that tells you that it was 5 times the standard deviation of normal rainfall, which is just incredible. We would call that a five sigma rainfall event. Typically, a record event would be around a 2.5 or 3 sigma event. So it's just unbelievable to think about how much rain they had in the month of May.
And they're going to get more. That's amazing enough. But if you go just northward in North America, the Canadian prairies are pretty dry.
Well, that's very true. And this is oftentimes what you see when you have one area receiving too much rain, another area receives not enough rain. And that area right now is the Canada prairies. And especially over April through May, we haven't had a whole lot in the way of rain. There are a few showers out there right now. There will be a few in about a week from now. But between there, rainfall and temperatures stay much above average. So we don't really look for a big change in the situation there, at least over the next week. And keep in mind, when we're talking about Oklahoma, Kansas had their second wettest May on record, and Nebraska had their third wettest May on record. So it wasn't an isolated event. This was pretty wide across the plains. And what we have in the Canada prairies is also fairly widespread.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us. Mike Tenora, of course, is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on Illinois Public Media, WillAg.org, for a Thursday afternoon. On U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.